Yes, good morning. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Tom, that was Mr. Hartford, in case you didn't recognize that. And I apologize. That was in stereo, and of course we only get one channel in stereo, even though we're a stereo thing here. I think you missed it. It was overlap, though. It was almost like mono stereo. So I didn't realize that when I was queuing it up, but it's still, even if you only get half the channels, and we got more than half. It's good stuff. The Aeroplane album from 1970. No. Yeah, it was 1970, I think. Am I dating myself here or what? So, it is officially spring, and it is officially kind of warm out. It's kind of windy. March is supposed to come in like a lion and go out like a lamb. I think it somewhere got confused there. Because this wind has been a little bit much. I'm going to file a complaint with somebody, but I don't think it's going to matter too much. But nonetheless, when the sun is out, the sun is shining, the wind has stopped, I'm good. So last Sunday, the sun was out, the wind was not blowing. I said, this is a good time to cut a hole in the side of the building, and it's exactly what I did. So we now have a overhead door that's functional and looks reasonably presentable, and I'm not done with it, but we can open the overhead door and throw stuff in as opposed to walking in and out the entry door, which I'm also going to replace. When I ordered this building, this is from a company down in North Carolina, it's a steel building, I said I don't want any doors, and of course they questioned that, and the reason was I could get overhead doors installed by them. And they were not crazy expensive. I think they were $800 a door, something like that. But they were roll-up uninsulated doors. And I did not want to deal with that. So I wanted insulated doors. So I said, I'll put the doors in. And just give me a door opening, entry door opening, 3-0 by 6-8, 3 feet by 6 feet, 8 inches. And when it came time for them to deliver the building, they said, oh, well, you got a door. No, I didn't order a door. I ordered a door opening. No, well, you paid for it. So read the fine print. What I thought they were charging me for the door opening was for the door. Well, the door turns out to be a fine piece of hardware that looks like it goes on a 1960s mobile home. And it is going bye-bye. I've got a real replacement door that is substantial, insulated with foam. And you have to see the door to appreciate it. I will save the door for when we have our grand opening, because you'll want to see what a crummy door it really was. Excuse me. It looks right now, it'll be second half of April that will be moved in. We're actually starting to make some strides now. You're going to find this hard to believe. You listen to this radio show every Saturday morning. I know you do, because you're out there and picking up the vibrations. And I built more shelves. I know, I had to. It was just, you know, if I walk in there and there's so much to do, I'll build some shelves. Well, we do have stuff. And now I'm done building regular 1 foot wide shelves. Now I'm going into big shelves. I built a workbench for when we make tanks and stuff, so that's in place. I had taken one out and put it back together, so we've got that set up. Which means I have a place to situate things instead of sitting them on the floor or a big work table I have, which is going to come apart at some point. Over top of that, a little bit over it, I put a shelf that I had made, we'd taken out of the other shop, so put that in. And then over that, probably 6-7 feet off the ground, off the floor, we'll put a wider, I guess I'll call it a shelf, for storing things like car seats and big things that couldn't fit on a 1 foot wide shelf. So that's on my agenda. It's on my long list of things to do. I'm kind of done with plumbing. So I thought, well, you know, it's getting warm enough. I'm going to go do the plumbing at my house. And there was one thing I needed to bring home. I brought home all this stuff. I got the wrenches. I got crimp tools. Because I had them all over the new place. And there's one thing. It was the power supply for running the pumps. I couldn't run the system without that. I couldn't start cutting things apart. So it's in the car now. I put it in the car yesterday afternoon. And, of course, I forgot to take it out of the car when I got home last night. So, but it's on the it's in the car. I mean, that's close. So I could walk back out of the house and get it. I wasn't planning on plumbing last night. So it's no great loss. But we shall see. The yesterday I was asked to go look at a house that was a foreclosure. And it was close by, and we went to look at it, and it is, I think, what I would term a mess. The price got cut in half, and it was a do-it-yourselfer's house, which isn't a bad thing necessarily, but it was a do-it-yourselfer who didn't quite understand soils or a little bit about how you make a basement not cave in on itself. It's built with cinder blocks, which is not in and of itself a catastrophe, but it isn't necessarily the best thing to do if you have marginal soils. And this site had marginal soils. So we're looking at one side where we can see the wall is pushed in out of plumb, probably at its worst, got to be in at least a foot. And it's block bonded blocks. I don't know if they're put together with cement or they're just block bonded. And for those of you who don't know what block bond is, you would, this is something from the 70s, I guess. You would stack the cinder blocks up, just stack them, no mortar in between. And then you would coat both sides with block bond, which was a fiber reinforced concrete that supposedly held them together. In the best of times, maybe. And the worst of times, absolutely not. And this particular house was the worst of times. And, you know, we're looking at it, and there were decks there that were just downright, absolutely, no equivocation, dangerous. Railings on the decks that were, if you leaned against them, you were over the side. But there was one deck that was put together with it was just... I didn't even know how anybody would stand on it to build it. It was so understructured. But, you know, we do these things, I guess. Not, I don't. Even I don't do that. But what struck it, we were getting ready to leave, and I looked at the foundation for one last glimpse. And I noticed there was a carrying beam for a floor that, it was like three layers of 2x8 or 10, something like that. Had poked through the wall as the wall receded, tried to go inside the house as it caved in. The carrying beam, of course, is rigid, and it's above grade, and it actually pushed out through the wall. I'm like, yeah, this is the project. And, you know, sometimes a cheap date's not the best date. So I tell you what, we better take a break, though. We could do that. I'm not that cheap a date that we're not going to take a break. No, sir. Because you know what will happen if I don't take the break. Trouble. Trouble right here in River City. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Stay with us. I got stuff to talk about. That's what we do. Oh, this, you know, this just, this is, relaxes me. I'll calm down now. Duke Ellington and Mr. Louis Armstrong in a mellow mood. Oh, can we just keep that in the background? We could do that. Yeah, that sets the tone. Sets the tone for the radio show. So, I checked my emails, and Les from Argyle has sent me an email. I got to read it to you. Morning, I was in Stockton Springs the other day and could not find your shop. Where are you located? Is this the one and the same Tom Goosey on the radio? Yes, Les. It is. It's not quite Goosey, but that's okay. It's hard to spell. But that's, yes, Les. Okay, if you're coming down Route 1, you're headed to Belfast. As soon as you cross over the Stockton Springs, I'm still in Searsport, okay? We haven't moved yet. You cross over the Stockton Springs line. You're in Searsport. You're picking up. You know it. You know you're close. On your left, as you're headed towards Belfast, you'll see a bunch of brick front buildings, and you'll see a line of Priuses. There's at least 8 or 10. I don't count them anymore. It's a bunch of Priuses. And there's a sign out front that says Prius. That's a clue. That's the hint. It says www.priusstore, a round red thing. You'll see it because there's Priuses there. So you'll see it, and that's us. Now, I could leave that up, can't I? I turned down the music. What's wrong with me? Where we're moving to is about a quarter mile back in the opposite direction. So if you know on Route 1, and please don't come in ahead of time. Wait till we open, okay? It's hard enough to get it done. But if you see where Just Barb's restaurant is on Route 1, corner of Main Street for Stockton and Route 1, we are directly across the street on the north side of Route 1. And you'll see a new kind of sand-colored, I think it's sandstone-colored building. That's where we're going to be. We're not there yet. And just go to the other place down the street, okay? Hopefully I haven't confused everybody with two locations there. But anyway, do we have got a text message here. Do you have pictures on the website of the new building without the crummy door? No, the crummy door's still there. That's on my list. I'm just one man. I can't do it all. No, I got the overhead door. I mean, you know, give me credit for that. That was enough. I will do the door. I've got to make sure the framing is right and yada yada. But it's coming. Let's see what else we got. I got a list here. Let's see, the mellow mood's over. So. I walk in this building and I'm not sure which direction to go in. And one of the problems I have had is we're packing stuff. So like the other day, I needed a bunch of wire nuts and we had to ferret those out. We did find them. I have hardware in these little plastic trays, and we had them on a number of shelves, and we took those down. And the trays are all cardboard boxes on the floor in the new shop. And I've been needing hardware, like, you know, of course, we've packed it all. So everything we've needed has been packed. So I said, okay, this will be a simple project. I don't seem to be focused today, this being yesterday. I'm focused today. I'm going to be like a laser today. You just watch. But let's put the shelves up for these stupid hardware. I tell you what. So I put the shelves up. That was pretty straightforward. But the dilemma has been with this stuff is a lot of the little trays are mixed up because I had one of my daughters sorting it when we moved into the last building. The building we're moving out of now, which was 7 years ago, I think, 6-7 years ago. And so a lot of stuff didn't get sorted right, and a lot of stuff is confused. So I only put on the shelves stuff that is sorted, like all nails. So there's like a little thing of finishing nails, and there's bigger finishing nails, and there's big nails, and there's stainless steel nails. And so I only put those things on. And all the stuff that's not sorted is on a separate shelf to be sorted. So as things progress, it's all being organized. And I have to admit, I am putting a lot of stuff into recycling. We're going to have a lot of stuff. We're going to have a garage sale at the old place of things that ain't coming with me, of which there are tools. There's strange stuff, let me tell you. I haven't been able to get to it yet because it's under a bunch of other stuff. I've got a 12-inch table saw. It's got to go bye-bye. I've got an audio-video box that one would take for a remote site. And I'm looking here at the microphone processor. We have processing equipment for the audio here in the studio. I got some of that in this box. It's one of those shipping type crates that has metal corners. It's all metal, and it's got audio and video stuff for mixing on the road. Don't even ask me where it came from, but I've got it. It's going to go bye-bye. I had it on Craigslist a couple of years ago. Nobody knew what it was. You have to see it to appreciate the stuff. Got that. Got God knows what else. So we're almost to the point where we're taking a whole corner of the building to put the stuff in that's going to go, of which there's an assortment of tires that are just too good to get rid of. That came off of something somebody gave me. He said, you sell cars, you should have some tires. Yeah, that's... And they don't fit anything that I sell. But I will, some of them I might, they might fit something. I don't know. But anyway, we got to dig through this stuff. Get it the heck out of here. So there will be a yard sale / garage sale. And it'll probably be an ongoing thing during regular business hours while we're still moving. So I will let you know, though, when that's ready. It's not ready yet. And I think we might have the electric cars sold, which is, I shouldn't say that because I'm going to jinx it, but that'll be a good thing. What else we got? Well, that's pretty much it. I guess we're all set. I've covered all bases. Let's, we got, I didn't give the phone number out. That's why there's no phone calls, no texts. Tom, at 8:28, I should be given the phone number. It's 1-800-966-1039. That's 1-800-966-1039. And we got the text line 601-207-4478. Some of you know that text line. You have it memorized. I know it. Oh, I also subscribe to some kind of garage magazine, which is mostly advertisements for head gasket sealer. Which I've tried on, I tried it on a Subaru once, and it didn't work. And I don't know if I told you the story. I had a friend bring in a Subaru he wants me to sell for him. He says, you could sell it. You're a car dealer. I said, I don't buy Subarus. I don't like Subarus. I love Subaru. They're great cars. They are just, they're nice cars to drive until they start acting up. And by acting up, I mean leak oil. Okay. I don't know what it is, but their head gaskets and their seals all leak. At some point in their life, they just start to let go. Up to that point, they might last a couple hundred thousand miles, but when they start to go, they go. So he brings me this nice Subaru that belonged to an older person, nice and clean. It's got one rust hole in the inner rocker, not on the outer rocker. And I could smell the oil as soon as he pulled up. I had to meet him because he had, you know, the paperwork and everything. It was at night. And, okay, I smell the oil burning on as it leaks out. So I take it in to see if we can get it inspected. And they said, well, you know, the head gaskets are leaking. Well, yeah, it's a Subaru. They always leak. This is why Tom doesn't buy Subarus. It was an 08 Forester. So, well, you know, it's $1,000 to $1,400 if we do it. It isn't leaking bad, but it's dribbling, I guess. So we can't sticker it. Okay. So it's going to be an as-is sale if I sell it for my friend. My friend who brought me the car and has gone to Italy for a month now says, yeah, Tom, you take care of this. I said, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do it. I'm stupid. Well, I'll tell you what. Then we'll take another break. Then I'll calm down. I'm sorry. I don't mean to diss Subarus. I like them. I like driving them. It's a nice car to drive. It's just when it starts to go, it just goes and it don't stop. And it don't stop it in the right way. It stops in the wrong way. Don't stop in the wrong way. Am I getting that right? Oh, let's listen to some Tuba Skinny. There we go. We're back. It's hot and cold. Good morning. I'm Tom. It's Saturday morning. Whoa. Put the music back on. We're going to talk about our friend Alan at General Appliance. I could have music for his commercial. There we go. You can roam over to Brewer, Center Street in Brewer. Roam right over there. The trip is worthwhile because when your major appliances are broken, you need to know where Alan... You know, here's the thing. Okay. You know, sometimes the revelations just come to me. All right. You know, you're out roaming around this morning. You're doing shopping. You're going to Home Depot. You're going to Lowe's. You're going to hardware store, whatever. Lumberyard. You're going to Lumberyard. If you don't know where General Appliances and Brewer, what a great opportunity just to head down Center Street and take a look at where they are so you know when something breaks where you can go. There's a bad joke there somewhere. You go to Center Street and look for General Appliance, and Alan will take care of you. Make sure your home appliances are working properly. And the phone number, of course, you know it, is 989-4341. And it's definitely worth the trip. And it's definitely worth the side trip today, while things are working fine, to know where you have to go to get the part. So hope that works for you. It works for me. I recently had my broken refrigerator at home, and I had to put all the food in a tote out on the porch and hope the squirrels wouldn't chew through the side of the tote while I went to Brewer to get the part from Alan, and I fixed it all by myself. I only made a couple of sparks, and that was all good. Well, I was during the testing phase. The installation phase went fine. So anyway, 989-4341 is General Appliance and Brewer. You want to know that number. And our number is 1-800-966-1039. And if I hit the buttons, we're going to talk. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Hey, just to make a short statement and nothing to do mostly with your show, except that every once in a while you bring up dyslexia. And so I just have a short joke for all those dyslexics out there. Okay. And also for those that are normal. And my joke is a man walks into a bra.
Okay. Took a minute. Yeah, I had to let register there. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Hey, that's how it goes on the show.
Oh, it does.
Anyway. Right.
Thank you.
That's my thing.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. That's like the bumper sticker, dog is my co-pilot, which is probably true in a lot of cases. Let's see. Got any text? 601-207-4478 is the text line. Let's see what we got here. With your new shop, are you going to have the yard sale before you move? And if so, could you save the date on your radio show and post it on your website? Absolutely. With your new shop, have you thought about getting inspection license? Yes, I have thought about it. I'm not sure if I want to do that or not, to be honest. I like the idea of having somebody else do the inspection just as a double check for us. To make sure that we haven't missed anything. I do have on my list here. I am going to get a car lift. Having a heated floor after, and I haven't talked about this on radio yet, but I had two runs of frostbite this winter messing around out in the cold. So having a heated floor is going to be heaven. And having a heated space to work in is going to be great from a personal comfort and safety point of view, but also from a productivity point of view, because I have to build up momentum to go work in a cold shop. So having a heated shop is going to be fantastic. And next on my list is going to be a lift. And you'll see, we have a relatively small overhead door because I don't intend to work on bigger vehicles. It's just not on the radar for me. So I'm not sure about the license thing, but inspection license thing. I'm on the fence. Let's see. Oh, dear, you're dyslexic? You're not dyslexic. Not like the caller was dyslexic. Okay. All right. The texts are just coming in at 601-207-4478. Jim in South Bristol. Good morning, Jim. Good to hear from you. How many heat sources do you have in the new shop, 5 or 6? Heat pump, wood pellet, wood boiler, oil-fired, gas-fired. Okay, no gas, okay? I don't have the heat pump hooked up at this point. At some point, I'm apt to, but, Jim, the shop is going to be off the grid. It will not be tied to the Central Maine power for a number of reasons. So running a heat pump isn't necessarily on the docket right now. So right now we're just going to run oil. I actually drilled holes in the wall yesterday for the feed, the fill and the vent pipe. And everything kind of lined up after the second try. I've got to get some gaskets. I've been shopping gaskets this morning. And I had to get some gaskets for the connections on the top. They're just rubber gaskets, nothing fancy. And I looked at the where I was going to get them from. I could order them online from a local source. And they're $6 each for this measly little gasket. So I've kind of winced at that a little bit because I need at least three, if not four. And So I've been shopping around to see. I mean, my friend Bruce, who is a repairman, he repairs power tools, says you need to go back to the source, the company that makes the gaskets. Well, you can't always do that because it's a standard gasket. So I measured it. It's 3 3/8 by 2 5/8 in the ID. So I'm just looking around to see. You know, because if I go and pop for the $20, and I have the luxury of a little bit of time, and you know, I'm doing stuff in between phone calls and before the show, if I can find it, and it's, I mean, the gasket is probably a 20-cent thing, and I just kind of wince at paying $6. I will. It's not the end of the world, but excuse me. I find this same kind of dilemma many times with car parts, and so we tend to shop those kind of hard too. I guess I'm a shop. It's shopping therapy is what it is. You know, I'm not out. If you've met me in person, you know I do not go out and shop heavily for clothes, although I have rather dapper wardrobe that I never wear because I'm always crawling around and doing something. But I do shopping therapy on car parts and heating system parts. So I'm not sure my wife understands that, but not sure many people understand that. Let's go to the phones. Let's see. Line one, there we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Thomas.
Hey.
Got a Prius question for you.
Oh, I could deal with that.
All right. Well, refueling issues. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's fairly common issue with second-generation Priuses. They have a bladder inside the fuel tank that can cause some variability depending on the temperature, how much fuel it'll take. And it's kind of a pain in the buttocks. It would be nice if you could take the mileage that you've accumulated on the display and divide it by 50 miles a gallon and be able to estimate how many gallons you will be putting in when you're refueling. But that isn't always possible. It's so variable. Sometimes the pump will shut off, and I know if I'm down to one bar on the tank, I know that it needs more than 3 gallons, and so I have to add more to it. But I don't want to damage the evaporated emissions system as well. Yeah. And so, you know what I'm talking about, Paul?
Oh yeah, yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, can you? I've gone through the owner's manual. That's no help at all. I've looked at Prius chat, and they discuss the problem a lot, but I wonder if you could give any advice on refueling. Such a simple thing, but they're such wonderful cars, but they sure have some quirks to them, and this is one of them. I wonder if you could give me some advice, please.
Yeah, I have no advice. I can't give, you know, I just fill it till it clicks, and I stop, so we don't get into this realm where we might overload it and damage the evaporative system. I guess the good news is that you are usually getting 50 miles per gallon. So if you're short a gallon or two, it's not the end of the world. You just might hit the gas station a little more frequently and put that, you know, $8 worth of gasoline into the car, or $12. I think a fill up is, for me, is about $12. So I'll be down and it's flashing and it's giving me the add fuel indicator, and I fill it up, it takes 8 gallons. And I said, okay, that doesn't quite make sense, but I don't want to, the bladder, there's no cheap date to replace that tank except for maybe a used tank, which your call just reminded me. I've got, cars that are parts cars, and I probably ought to pull the tanks off of them before I scrap them, huh?
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
A fill-up, when you get down to one bar and maybe flashing, a fill-up is 8 gallons, and yep. Yet it's almost a 12-gallon tank.
And I'm wondering, because when I put that 8 gallons in, it indicates it's full. So I'm wondering if they are kind of lying to us, because they do not want you to run the car empty. And I'll tell you an experience I had. First customer I had that ran out of gas, he was in Belfast, and he ran out of gas, and he got gas, put it in the car. Car wouldn't start. I had [S2] Wow. [S1] To go there with my scan tool and reset the car twice before I could get it to start for him. So I think there's some voodoo that goes on with the fuel system. And I can ask my Toyota guy, my certified Toyota friend, who what exactly is going on there. And I will do that, see if I can get an answer for you maybe for next week, because that's an interesting question.
So rule number one is don't run out of fuel.
Absolutely. Do not do that.
Okay.
Go to the gas station. Because and I've had it happen a couple times now with different people, where if they ran out of gas, somebody with a scan tool has to reset, clear the check engine code. And I think you get a red triangle, too, just to keep it fun.
Yep. So, you talk about pulling gas tanks and replacing gas tanks, but this seems to me, this is just an issue whether the car is...
Oh, yeah. It's not a
20,000 miles on it or 406,000 miles on it.
I agree. But okay. You just reminded me that, I've been concerned that, gee, someday I might have to replace a gas tank on one of these, and that's going to be an expensive deal. And I'm like, I've got four of them in my yard.
Yep.
And I could tip the car on the side and take the gas tank out if I need to. I don't have to baby the car anymore, because these are cars that have been hit. It just kind of makes sense to – matter of fact, I have a car that – I was told won't take a sticker until it needs new straps for the till it gets straps for the gas tank. I got straps. I'm going to be getting rid of these cars in the next couple of weeks. A couple of them at least. So, what is more to me? I have a friend who recycles cars. What is more fun than turning a car on its side? Oh my God! And just
the
being
only
able
thing
to play
more
with
fun
it.
Fun than turning it on its side is turning it on its roof.
Oh. Well, that could happen.
And standing on top of it and just pulling parts.
Yeah.
Oh, what joy.
Well, my son says, well, we got to get rid of this car. We got, he names the customer who we got the car from, had the accident. He's, we got to get rid of this car. I said, no, I've got all the spare bits that I didn't need in the car. What's a better storage medium than the car itself? Yeah, he has his moments. He's more like his mother in that he's a little more organized and
too tidy.
Yeah, too tidy. Anyway,
so how far can you drive, or have you driven, when you're down on one flashing bar? How far have you dared drive?
Oh gosh, probably 20, 30 miles.
Wow.
And I've been nervous about it because I don't want to run out of gas, because I usually don't have a scan tool with me. I do now. I have a Wi-Fi, not a Wi-Fi, a Bluetooth ODB connector, and I have software on my phone for. I got it specifically for monitoring Priuses, and
you're the man.
So it is what it is.
Yeah. Do you find that fueling is more predictable in the summer than in the winter? In the winter, you get more of this variability.
Okay. Yeah, I see. This morning I was coming up and I started out and I filled the tank of midweek, and just been doing short jumps, and my mileage was low. It was in the mid 30s, and you know, doing the drive to, because I get in the car, it's warming up, I'm done before it warms up. I get, and I'm jumping on the Route 1, so I have to hit the throttle or I'm going to die. Yeah. So you're not driving as efficiently as you can, whereas Saturday morning I'm driving from Searsport to Bangor. You know, it's a little bit more of a leisurely ride. MPGs go up. I picked up a nice Prius last week and drove down and got 51 miles per gallon. You know, I reset it. I'm evaluating the car to see what it's going to need, if it needs anything, and specifically looking at the battery. And it wasn't particularly warm day. It wasn't Arctic out, but I got 51 miles to the gallon.
So. Nice. Yeah, we're coming back into that time of year when we can get good gas mileage and fewer issues at the fuel pump.
Yep.
How many miles on your Prius now, Tom?
I just turned 408,000.
Oh yeah. I want to get another set of wheels. You got some wheels?
I have some. The short answer is yes. I don't know how many, but do you need four or just?
Yes.
Okay. Give me a call during the week. I know we've got them. I just have to ferret them out. They're on cars.
Yeah, great.
Okay. I got to let you go. We're out of time. Thank you.
Take care.
See you. Bye-bye. Prius talk with Tom. Let's see. There was another thing I had about Priuses, and I should have wrote it down, but it's gone now. So we're just going to get ready. Let's see. What do we got for tunes? What's the? Oh, man. Oh, yeah. You know, I said to myself this week, I said, self, you're going to play this on Saturday morning because this is just one of those cuts. And Mr. Errol Garner, Saturday morning, it's hot and cold. Stay with us. We have another hour to go. Big Radio Fun. I haven't even talked about the electric car stuff yet that I've got on paper. Right there, the paper. Okay. Stay with us. We'll be back in a bit. Okay, we're back on 907. It's the Voice of Maine. It's hot and cold. Saturday morning is what it is, in case you're questioning what day of the week it is. My name is Tom. Me llamo Tomas. Hola, amigos. And that's Mr. Hartford in the background. And we'll fade that down. And let's see. What do we got? We got some text messages here. This fine morning, let's see, excuse me, in talking Prius, is there anything to watch out for on a 2010 with 188,000 miles on it? Well, here's the things. I apologize if I repeat this a lot, but I don't think I do. I do in person when I talk to people who come in, but the things that I look for when I'm driving a car, excuse me, and usually I'm buying my cars online, so I'm not always test driving them. But when I get in the car, I'm looking to see, obviously, are there any lights on? ABS light, traction control light, VSC light, which is sort of a traction control thing. Any of those lights are on. The tire pressure light, I'm not as concerned about, although I'd want to look at the tires to see. Could be that you have different rims and they don't have the sensors on them. At any rate, I also would be looking, listening for noise. If you turn the wheel a little bit from side to side, do you have a noise that goes away? Usually it's an indication of a wheel bearing. How do the brakes feel? Are they noisy? Is the exhaust noisy? These are all typical things that are not a big deal to fix unless you go someplace really expensive. What do the tires look like? And check the oil. Look at the fluids, you know, before you start the car. And that kind of it. I have a friend in upstate New York who's an engineer, and one of his coworkers has a. They all got Priuses. One of his coworkers has a Prius, and started acting up. And I'm trying to diagnose this 2006 Prius long distance over the phone with people who don't know anything about Priuses. And they have taken it to a garage, and the mechanic told them it was the 12-volt battery, which sometimes can happen, but I didn't think that was the case. They changed the 12-volt battery, and what's happening is they drive the car a little bit, and it stops running, or it acts up. And they kind of clued me into something. They referred to it as being like it was in limp mode. And what that usually means is that you can lose a lot of the power the car has. It still might run, but not run very fast and has no acceleration. Usually that means something is shutting down the hybrid system, and usually that is the coolant system for the hybrid. The hybrid system has its own coolant system, and it uses electric pump and electric diverter valve, and it's not an expensive fix. And what the car does is it will fail safe. It will not allow you to damage it by overheating it, by overheating the electronics at least. So I think that's what's going on. And simple diagnosis for that, if you're really into this, is to look in the coolant reservoir when the car is running for the electronics. You should see the fluid flowing. So simple. And I emailed that to them, and I haven't heard anything back. I mean, guys, come on. Tell me yes or no. If I diagnosed it, you know, 200 miles away, I'd like a little bit of thanks. But that's what I'd look for. You can get it on the Lyft, too, if you have a mechanic you trust. But you can usually peek underneath and see how it looks. 2010 shouldn't have too many rust issues. I came across, I get this magazine for garages, and like I said, they sell a lot of stuff for mechanics, tools and magic potions to put in for fixing head gaskets, which never seems to work. But they had an article about electric vehicles, and they're quantifying the kind of electric vehicle now, because everybody is making a new push to have fuel cell cars. And basically, a fuel cell car is an electric car that uses a fuel cell to generate the electricity, whereas a battery electric car runs on batteries. This is a little subtopic. I'm just going to go over the pithy points here because it at least got my interest. The battery electric revolution, when really big news is the news itself. January 2019, GM CEO Mary Barra announced that GM has never replaced a Chevrolet Volt or Bolt battery pack. Given that the Volt has sold 152,000 units in the domestic market since 2011, that's quite a statement, which it is. Number two, GM has ceased Volt and Bolt production. A new battery electric vehicle will sport a Cadillac nameplate, which is logical given that most battery electric vehicles are selling well within Cadillac's price range. Okay. Tesla is reportedly the number one top-selling electric vehicle in 2018 domestic market. Another report, Tesla Model 3 was the fifth best-selling car in the United States during the fourth quarter of 2018. That was kind of interesting. According to one anecdotal source, a Tesla Model X ran 350,000 miles at a cost of $18,000 for maintenance. I guess that's good. I don't know. I'd wince a little bit at $18,000 maintenance. I can't tell you if that's a good or a bad thing, though. Maybe it is. I think a Model X was kind of expensive. Number five, about 50. That's okay. That's about. Oh, okay. They continued it here. So that's about 51 cents per mile, which is relatively cheap when compared to piston engines that require numerous oil and filter changes, spark plugs, drive belt, coolant hose, and fluid replacements during the same 350,000-mile range. I guess if you're going to a dealer, in either case, you can wince a lot. Most important number for the Model X was battery degradation, which was estimated at a very acceptable 13%. Tesla is reportedly manufacturing solar panels for home use, which could drastically reduce the cost of driving electric vehicles. Nissan's new Leaf E Plus produces about 217 horsepower and 250 foot-pounds of torque. Pound-feet. Oh, God. Even I, not remembering stuff from school, remember that. that positions it to compete with domestically manufactured and very popular Tesla Model 3. Tesla is leading the long-range electric truck market by selling small fleets of 50 to 100 Tesla over-the-road haulers to major distribution companies for cost and performance evaluations. They look to other import and domestic over-the-road nameplates to respond with their own version of electric power. One of which is Volkswagen, who is going 180 degrees off from the whole diesel thing to electric cars, two of which are noteworthy. One is an electric Volkswagen bus. My heart just went pitter-patter. Which looks like an old Volkswagen bus, which my heart's fluttering now. The other one is an electric dune buggy, which I could care less about, but it would be fun to have to drive. Let's see. What do we got here for? We got another text. This is a long email about who uses text messaging. And a lot of people do. And it's just easy if you're shy. You don't want to talk on the phone or I never used texting for a long time. And then I realized how long I talk. I can sit here and talk for 2 hours. Go figure, huh? Well, if I get on the phone with, especially with a friend, you know, it could be a long conversation. And if I can text them a couple of sentences of what was important and not, well, you know, I was taking the straps off the gas tank on a Prius. It was on its side. And, you know, I got to tell the whole story. And it just, you know, next thing you know, it's 20 minutes later. And I realized I don't have that much time. Anyway, we're going to take a break here. It's 9:16. Where'd that first hour go? I'm not sure. But we'll take care of a little bit of business. We'll be right back. It's hot and cold. Stay with us.
Yeah, me too. You notice how I got those two together there, Manfred Mann and Blind Blake, both talking about do-wah-diddy-diddy-wah-diddy. It's very similar, very similar.
Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line, 601-207-4478. Got a text in here. What do you know about Governor Mills spending the money she received from a car manufacturer settlement? She's going to put that towards charging stations and something else that affects 900 electric car users in Maine. I know nothing about it. That's the first I've heard of it. From my point of view, if electric cars are to become anything of value in our society, they have to recharge rapidly, and charging stations, unfortunately, are required for that. When I've had electric cars on the road, I thought, okay, if I can get 40 miles range, I could drive up here on Saturday morning, and I could plug into Clear. It was Clear Channel back then. Now I could plug into Blueberry's electric outlet, recharge my batteries, and drive home. And that big bucks I'm making just amplifies with the dollars worth of electricity I might use to recharge the batteries. But, you know, I had a the major experience I had recharging electric cars was it was 6 years ago. Darling's did a promotion on plug-in hybrids, on hybrids in general, but they gave me a plug-in Ford Fusion, 2013 plug-in Ford Fusion, and I recharged it at my house at night, and it was about a 4-hour recharge, and it gave me about 20 miles range, which I came to appreciate 20 miles range wasn't enough for what I thought. You know, I live in Searsport. I go to the post office in Searsport. I go to Tozier store. 20 miles, man, that'd be great. I won't use any gas. And by noontime, I had gone through that 20 miles. You know, so we don't appreciate how many miles we really put on in a state like Maine. It's so rural, as opposed to people in, say, New Jersey, who might go 5 miles in the course of a day, back and forth to work or something. Of course, a lot of that is spent sitting in traffic. I went to school in an urban area. 16-mile commute took me an hour and a half to 2 hours, depending on the time. It took less if it was like 5:30 in the morning, which when I was going to school, I would commute at 5:30 in the morning to miss the traffic, which was starting. The rush hour was starting at 5:30, 6 a.m. Anyway, our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. We got the text, 601-207-4478, if you'd like to call in. The lines are open. As I said, I've been on this shelf-building jag, and I'm just about done building shelves. And what I've been doing is making shelves out of OSB, which, you know, if you go to a store, you go to a home center, and you look at shelving, it ain't cheap. A sheet of OSB is $10. So if I rip it into 1 foot widths, I've got 40 lineal feet. 32 lineal feet, excuse me, of shelving. And then $10. Now it's only 7/16 thick. So what I do is, I'm letting out my trade secrets here now. I get bundles of strapping, 1x3 strapping, and I make a frame to go underneath the OSB to support it, and screw it all together with sheetrock screws. And it's adequate for most of the things that I would put on shelves. Or, you know, you stop and think about, what do you put on shelves? Even what I put on when we have heavy stuff, it's car stuff. It doesn't weigh that much. And you're only spanning 1 foot from the framing to the framing. So the OSB could deal with that. So I'm into it probably, I don't know, for an 8-foot shelf, $3? No, more than that, $4. So not a bad deal. Let's go back to the phones. We got some phone calls going here now. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, good morning, Tom. I was wondering if you did a cost comparison on your metal building compared to being stick-built.
Hmm. I did. I'm always analyzing costs. It would have been about a wash. The trade-off was this, and several aspects of this that were interesting. First one is the building itself, 30x64, was $25,000. That's erected. So I was looking at doing a wood frame building and covering it with steel siding. It would look about the same. And I was coming in a little bit under that, but the wild card was labor. The wild card was we possibly had to get a crane in because we were going to have a truss roof. There was a weighting component to it. But the real reason I went with the steel building was I thought at the time I was going to have them finance it for me, which they would have done. And their financing didn't turn out. They had a rent-to-own deal where you pay 50% down and they'll finance 50%. But it was the interest rate was stupid. So I did not do that. And I think they said 6 to 8 weeks to come and do the building. And that was about where they were. They were at the 8-week mark. And I'd given them a deposit. And anyway. So that was where I'm at. Now, there's a catch here, and this goes for any steel building. Steel is an excellent conductor. It'll conduct electricity. If you have a short on steel and you touch it at the wrong, if you get electrocuted, like wire, basically. It also conducts heat really well. So I was looking this morning as I was coming through Target Industrial Circle at one of the steel buildings, and you can see the steel framing on the outside of the structure because it's warmer. And a typical steel building, they might use fiberglass bats that are faced with vinyl. And that'll go, so they'll erect the frame. They'll put these fiberglass bats, they're usually 4 inches thick, on the outside of the building. Then they will put the siding over it and screw through the fiberglass, which they can compress. So where the framing is, it gets very compressed. The steel's a great conductor. Compressed fiberglass is a pretty good conductor. It's not a very good insulator. And you have some major compromise in terms of the steel framing conducting heat. So what we're doing, which is an extra cost, is we've sistered wood to the steel framing and are cutting and fitting foam. So we have a double layer of foam, whereas if it was stick-built, we'd probably only have a single layer. I think we're still ahead of the game, although it is eating up more of my time to do this. But we've decoupled all the steel framing, or we're in the process of decoupling it. So the building should heat a lot better. And the plan at this point, and Jim had asked about this last hour, what I'm heating with, the plan is at some point to have some active solar heating the radiant floor. So we've had folks who have called in who have built garages with radiant slabs. And with some solar component to it, you can really keep the building above freezing just with solar, no backup heat. I want to do more than that, but if I can knock off 50% of the heating cost with active solar for not much money, that's probably what we'll do. Let's see. We got time for text message. Tom, the 2013 Prius with 327,000 miles. Won't pass inspection due to the horn not working. Mechanic says it's $900 to fix. I don't think so. Why so expensive for a horn? It may be there's some electronics. It may be there's a couple things it could be. And I've been down this road with the third generation Prius. It's possibly the clock spring in the steering mechanism. That's not a $900 fix. It may be at the dealer. It's not in Tom's world. It could be there are some electronic relays that operate the horn. Could be one of those. Again, an OEM dealer part could get you up in there, but you can put a used one in. So if we can help you, let me know. Call me during the week. And let's see. If I hit the tune machine here, where do we want to go? Yeah, we'll go here because I need to calm down. $900 for a horn. Good Lord. It's hot and cold. Stay with us. 9:30 straight up. We'll be back in just a bit. Okay, we're back. It's 9:35. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. We got a text line, 601-207-4478. Hey, today's Eric Clapton's birthday. Eric Clapton is 74 years old. When did that happen? And tomorrow, Herb Alpert's birthday, man. And I Herb Alpert, he's in his 80s, and he's still rolling, man. And more an artist now. He's a sculptor. I don't know if you've ever seen that on TV, Herb Alpert the sculptor. And I mean, you know, it was just yesterday that we would turn on the radio, and we would hear this. Herb Alpert, one of the founders of A&M Records, who brought us folks like Leon Russell and Joe Cocker, and got a good ear. Speaking of good ears, let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hey, this Uber stuff, I think it's a losing proposition. You know anybody who's tried it? Uber driving?
No.
The federal standard is 50 cents a mile, right, for deductions and mileage.
Mm-hmm.
How can you possibly use your own car and then be able to buy another car at some point and continue to do it at 50 cents a mile and take fees that I heard that are not that much? I don't know that much about it. But
yeah.
I've never been on an Uber, but
I haven't either. I usually Uber guys are in their own cars, and you know, if you're getting whatever you get for drive, I'm sure it's more than 50 cents a mile you get as an Uber driver. If you own your car, or even if you're making payments, obviously you're not going to do it and try to lose money. You're going to try to do it and make money. And it's going to be a question of how much driving you do or how much driving you want to do. If I was bored and had nothing to do, I'd consider doing it just for fun. But, you know, a lot of things I would do for fun before being a driver. Back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Yes, I have a question about the siding on my house.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Okay, the house is 12 years old, and it's got James Hardy board on the siding.
Mm-hmm.
And the butt joints between the clapboards are the silicone that was used to seal those is cracking, particularly on the south side of the house where the sun really beats on it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to have to dig all that out and reseal all those butt joints. The house is 12 years old, so they didn't do any flashing behind the joints. When the house was originally built.
Okay.
And I was wondering if there was any specific type of silicone caulking that you would recommend for that? I don't want to have to do that job again.
Yeah.
If I can avoid it.
Well, you wouldn't use silicone caulk. Okay. You would use something that's flexible, though. And I would use a urethane. It's a little bit messier, but it'll take paint and it's waterproof. And the problem, and I've got hardy board on my house, is it expands and contracts a lot with temperature. So you have to have a gap there initially, so it doesn't buckle outwards. So a very resilient caulk is necessary. Silicone would be good, except that you can't paint it. So that would be a problem.
Okay. Does the urethane come in color, or is it all clear?
It's usually in a color, but you can paint it.
Okay, yeah, because the clapboards are white. I would just want to put white in there so that it would not.
Okay, you could.
I definitely don't want a contrast with the number of butt joints I got to deal with.
Yeah. Okay. The white, you can get white. That's available.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
You can get white urethane, so that would work well. Okay.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye bye. I'm just looking. Usually you're using a silicone for that. I was just looking here at just to make sure I wasn't misquoting. That would be my first choice. I remember. I just used some cellular PVC trim when I put the garage door in at the shop. And I was remembering on this old house, for covering nail holes and stuff in PVC trim, they used Bondo. Now, I had to countersink. I had to use a self-drilling screw because I was anchoring into steel. So I countersunk holes so the fastener head is recessed. And at some point, I'll go ahead and use fiberglass, not Bondo. I hate Bondo. I guess it's okay for skim coating before you paint, but for anything that I really want to hold, I'll use a short strand fiberglass. Let's see, line two. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Good morning, Tom.
Hi.
I have a question about insulating my attic. I have an attic that we've used for storage for years that has a floored over ceiling, and I believe it's got some old rock wall underneath the floor, but I want to increase the R value. And I had the idea from things that you've said in the past about using foam insulation, but we still want to use it for storage, so I was thinking that Luan or plywood or something over the top.
Yeah.
I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah. I would fill the cavity. A lot of times rock wool was put in not completely filling the cavity, so I would top off the cavity first with cellulose and then and making sure that any wiring you want done is done beforehand, and then a layer of foam on top. With either, I would probably go a little thicker than Luan, but probably Luan would be okay because it would be supported by the foam. I kind of lean towards OSB, which might be cheaper. I don't, that's a shopping thing. But that would work fine, and I would use some long fasteners. I mean, if you're using OSB, you could just lay it down. I don't even think you need to fasten it. And I would try to seal the joints on the foam if I could.
Okay. How thick would you go with the foam?
Ooh, I'd want to see a minimum of R40 in that ceiling. So if you figure that the blown-in cavity is, 6 inches, you can figure that insulation value at maybe 3 per inch, so that's 18. So you'd want to have another 22 on top of that, which would be probably 4 inches of styrofoam or 3 and a half inches of polyisofoam.
Okay. Can you buy it in 4-inch or all I've seen?
Usually not. Usually it's going to be 2-inch, and you're going to double up, which is convenient in that you can offset joints that way. And then you just could seal the final layer. You don't have to seal all the layers.
Okay. Is there any special way of addressing the eaves?
If you were doing a flat ceiling floor here, I would
get, I would maintain an airspace at the eave, maybe an inch, inch and a half, with foam. So I would cut and fit foam into the rafter cavity and then foam out, or have your flat sheet foam going up to that. I mean, you could just, the flat foam could just be put in such a way you cut around the rafters and maintain an airspace for air to ventilate up through.
What about pushing the foam up as closely used as it can, and then putting cellulose into the real low area, to fill in the void?
It would be preferable, I think, to use foam to get there, because you don't have a lot of headroom. And excuse me, we're talking R3 to 4 per inch when you're using cellulose. Whereas foam, you're going to double that number.
I see.
And it gives you the opportunity to get the R value up high enough that you don't have ice dam problems.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome.
Appreciate that.
Okay, bye-bye.
Oh, do you still sell foam?
Right now, we're not. All the foam we have, we're using in our new building, and we don't have any lined up to come in for probably a month.
Okay.
All right.
Well, very good. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. I think this is Lloyd. I think Lloyd's asking me if I want a pencil or a pen. I actually don't need any, Lloyd. Thank you. I appreciate the offer. Let's see. We've got the article here from Maine Biz. Let's see. And I can't read that because it's way too long. But I will read it over the weekend and look at it next week. The article of Maine, excuse me, is on the electric vehicle initiatives that Governor Mills and Efficiency Maine are up to. I'd be curious to see. I haven't always agreed with everything Efficiency Maine does, but there are opportunities there to do things that could help ultimately in the long run in the state of Maine. And I can't argue with that, but I will read it because I don't know. I think I mentioned last week, and I'll share this just because this was the big sticking point for me in Efficiency Maine. Folks ask me about the geyser heat pump water heater, which was made here in Maine and is no longer made here in Maine. It's no longer made for residential use, because it's not eligible for any rebates. And that's very unfortunate. And I think if I was Philosopher King at Efficiency Maine, I would be working with a Maine manufacturer who makes a good product. There's no loss of efficiency in that unit. And they've made heat pump water heaters for years, over 20 years at this point, maybe not over 20 years anymore because they stopped making them. They are making them for customers down south for commercial applications, but not for here. So our phone number is 1-800-966-1039, Texas 601-207-4478. If you'd like to give us a call this morning, and Lloyd, you don't owe me anything. So I appreciate the offer. Let's see, what else we got going on? I am finishing up walls, hopefully, this weekend in my building, which will mean we'll be going in great guns with moving things in. And there'll be more shelves, but not many. There'll just be some big storage shelves. And I've got all these portable shelves we're bringing over that are slowly coming apart, or being taken apart, excuse me. This is the reason everything in my shop is screwed together. Is so for a moment like this, when I can take everything apart again and move it to a new location. And for those of you who have been into the entrance of my shop, man, have we got stuff to take apart. We just have barely scratched the surface. We're still getting the stuff off the surfaces, so we get to the surfaces to take them apart. But we're getting there. We are making progress. So, and folks have come to me as they've heard different odd things that I have for sale.
One of which I should mention, which is sort of the gorilla in the china shop, or the bull in the china shop, is I have an insulated building on skids. It's like a built kind of like a shed, but it is completely insulated. And I don't mean insulated with 3 inches of fiberglass. I mean insulated with foam, top, bottom, sides. And if somebody's interested in an 8-foot by 12-foot shed that they could put on a trailer and haul down the road, has no siding on it on the outside, has no sheathing on it on the inside, and it has a roof that's flat. So you need to put together a peaked roof or a shed roof, but you don't have to insulate it because it's got foam. It's got a foam roof, and it's got to leave Tom's place, although Tom wants to keep it. The other thing is, for folks who are looking for me, especially like the guy with the 2013 Prius, two ways to contact me. One is you can go on the internet and go to our website, which is www.prius.store. The other way is our phone number, which is 888-866-8970. Those are two ways to find us. And Pete is there right now if you want to call. And if it's something for me, you can leave a message and I will get back to you. And I hit the microphone because we have no phone calls right now. I started sweeping the floor in the shop, and I brought an official garbage can over, and it's starting to look clean and sanitary, and it's dry. Although I found an interesting thing happened. The south side of the building is nice and clear. The ice is all melted. The snow's gone. The north side, I went in yesterday. The floor had been all dry. I have had heat running into it. I went in yesterday, and the floor was wet on the north side. So I said, well, let me go up back and look. I know what I'm going to find. And there is ice and snow on the north side that slid off the roof and has just kind of not melted on the backside. It's not seeing the sun. And the heat from the slab has not been adequate to melt the snow or the ice because I haven't run the heat that much yet. So once the heating system is operating, I think it'll keep condensation far enough away, frozen precipitation far enough away from the building that it won't leak in underneath the sills and cause an issue of a wet floor. I didn't run the heat enough yesterday, although it did take the chill off. You know, it's kind of interesting. I haven't lived with a radiant floor in a long time, and usually it's been relatively thin radiant floors like gypcrete or something like that. To have a slab that's kind of massive, I've found that on a day like yesterday, if I get in there and turn the heat on, usually within an hour, I can sense the difference in the building, that the heat is making its way out of the mass of the concrete up into the living space and is comfortable. And even though the roof is not insulated at this point, the radiant floor, any radiant floor, will radiate heat up 6 feet. As you get closer to the ceiling, as you go higher than 6 feet, the room temperature actually drops off, which is kind of a nice feature. So even in a building that is still pretty much like a barn, because I'm not done insulating, nowhere near done insulating it yet, we've been able to put on the heat and make it feel comfortable and maintain for a couple days. Once you get some heat into that mass, It kind of holds the heat. You know, there is always this, for years, from when I started dealing with heating things, folks who made log homes always said, well, you know, log isn't that insulative, but it's massive, has a lot of thermal mass, and that compensates. There is some truth in that. It does do a reasonable job, but the problem is that it's still, the mass kind of feels warm. But the insulation value of many logs, especially manufactured logs that are standard size, is not that great. And you've got a crack every, I don't know, say 6 inches to 12 inches, depending on the size of the log, that has to be
completely airtight. That isn't always the case, especially as the building settles, especially around windows and doors. So you're going back and you're checking weather stripping or chinking to make sure that it will maintain its tightness. That being said, I love the look, and I would consider it in the right circumstance with the right heating system. But what I've seen, as I've dealt with folks who have had these kind of structures, thermal mass does not supersede good insulation. Good insulation makes the difference. The mass is nice to have, though. And radiant slab in this case is kind of nice to have because it is equivalent to a very large storage system that you don't have to put in because it's the foundation of the building. So it's doing kind of double duty for you in keeping storing energy from whatever source. But if you're using something like a wood boiler or a solar system where you have to store thermal heat, a concrete slab is not a bad way to go. Anyway, let's see. With that being said, I think I got to head out into the sunset on Eric Clapton's birthday. Oh, man, I know what I'm listening to later. You take care. Enjoy the weather. It will continue. I've heard it's going to continue to warm up. So I think we'll bank on that one. See you next week.